Welcome to our listeners. I'm your host, Sarah Hamed. I'm a PhD candidate at the Department for the Study of Religion at the University of Toronto. The Reading Muslims Project at the Institute of Islamic Studies is a Connaught Global Challenge recipient. Its mandate is to re-examine the place of textuality in Islamic studies. One of its four hubs is called Muslims as Readers, which involves exploring how Muslim community members construct authoritative forms of religious interpretation. Dr. Catherine Bullock joins us to discuss Canadian Islamic institutions and their textual productions as matrices for discourses on Muslim identity formation, a subject of paramount relevance to Canadian Muslims today. Dr. Bullock is a community activist, a University of Toronto lecturer on political Islam, founder of the Teslat Institute, a think tank dedicated to expressing and recording Muslim experiences in Canada, and she is also president of Compass Books, a quality Islamic book publishing company. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Bullock.
Thank you, Sarah. It's my pleasure to be with you today.
While the Teslat Institute emphasizes textuality through rigorous research, archival, and documentation of Muslim experiences, Compass Books aims to produce quality Islamic texts to help ground Muslim children as Muslims growing up in the West. In this interview, we will focus on Compass Books and how it envisions its role in Muslim identity formation in Canada. So perhaps we can begin by discussing how you, Dr. Bullock, wear various hats as a Muslim community activist and as an academic. So can you elaborate on how your various roles, so as an activist and academic, relate to how you came to create Compass Books? So, for example, what gap does it fill in the industry? Can you speak to us about the name of the company, et cetera?
Compass Books is actually directly related to two of the different hats that I've worn ever since I became Muslim in 1994, my academic hat and my activist hat. The activist story part is that I had helped found an organization called the Federation of Muslim Women. And the early years, this was in 1995, I think, or we officially incorporated in 1997, I think. We would set up what we used to call dawah tables in places like shopping malls and events and conferences. And one of them was an annual teachers conference that OISE used to hold. And I don't know if it still does hold it anymore. And so we would go with a table full of flyers about Islam, especially focused on Muslim women, that we were supplied by, I think they were the ICNA flyers, the White Islam flyers, but also other ones, the Discover Islam series. And I can't quite remember why I thought of this, but at the time, ISNA Canada had a book service called IBS, and I don't remember what that stands for either. And so I negotiated with the owner or the manager that we would take the books and sell them, and that he would give us 10% of the sale of the profit that would go towards Federation of Muslim Women. And I've always loved books. I've grown up loving books. And so I thought this was a great idea. So we would have the flyers and we would have the books. And at the OISE conference, I had so many teachers coming. They like just rushed straight to the book section. They were eager. They were looking through them. And then they were like, oh, I never get access to these kinds of books. I really love them for my classroom. So they would buy them. And the books that were there, I think, weren't that good quality. And they were probably the best of what was available at the time in the early 90s, in those mid-90s. And I put an idea in my head that there needed to be books written about Islam for the public school system that teachers would find useful to have in their classroom. So that's the activist side putting that idea in my head. Then from the academic side, I had turned my PhD thesis into a book, as you know, we're supposed to do. And had got a very small amount of money from the publisher for it. And I remember thinking, gosh, you know, this book sells for $18 and I get a dollar a book. So, you know, what kind of deal is that? Maybe if I own my own company, I'll get more money. So completely selfish. I'm just going to be totally upfront about that. It's a completely selfish reason. There are other reasons we can come to later, but that was one of the motivating factors. So you put that together with this need to create Islamic books for the public school system. And a friend came to me once and she said, I want to do a detective series like Nancy Drew, but have the detective, the main characters, twin Muslim girls. And I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. I want to also write books and get paid better for it. Let's found a publishing company. And she's like, all right. So we went ahead and incorporated this Compass Books in 2007. Well. I didn't know at the time, of course, that as one author told me once, if you want to a publishing company to make a small fortune, you need to start with a big fortune. So actually, when you think about how much money I've poured into Compass Books, considering the original goal there, it's actually quite hilarious. At least $10,000. So.
Oh, wow. Okay, so on the one hand, you were looking to create books for the secular public school system, but also I think on the other hand, according to the Compass Books website, there was also a desire to create books to help ground Muslim children as Muslims. Can you speak to that?
Yes, so when I had my first kid, he was born in 2000. And obviously, because I've always loved books, I wanted to bring books into his life. And I started reading him books when he was 3 months old. And I would go to the library or go down to Valley Village. You can buy books very, very cheap or get them for free, obviously, from the library. And we always had tons and tons of books. At that age, it's board books, right? So I was like reading all these books about the stuff you read at that age, colors and shapes and, you know, simple words. And I was like, where are the Muslim books that do this? And at the time, I think there was only one or two on the market. Of course, I bought those and we went through them and they were great, but it's like not enough. So I was like, I want him to have a book that's about his identity, not necessarily about religion, but just to make his identity seem normal to him so that he can pick up a book about colors and it'll have like quote unquote Muslim things in it. It doesn't have to be preachy. Like, unfortunately at that time, the market has changed so much in the last 20 years. It's just incredible. But in those days, most of the kids' books weren't very good quality. The Islamic kids' books, they had a language that wasn't age appropriate, like really big vocabulary, or they were incredibly boring and preachy, and the paper quality wasn't always that great. And the books about Islam that they were bringing home from school tended to be written by non-Muslims. Sometimes they contained little errors in them about Islam, but they're always sort of very focused on religion, religious preaching. And I know that religious teachings are important, of course. I used to teach at a weekend Islamic school. But I believe that identity is also about just being who you are. And so the religion part is important, but it can be incidental. So it's not just for kids. I think adults have this feeling too. We need to sort of look around and see ourselves as our multiple identities in the world around us, including in our literature and in film, of course. So the first series we did was a board book series called At the Masjid, four little books, one on shapes, one on colors, one on numbers, and one on opposites, with just the single word, red, blue, whatever. And each book is a tour of the masjid. I don't think people actually notice this, but the first image is always the outside or the door of the mosque, and then you open the mosque and you go inside and you take a little tour. And then the last image is always like a nighttime image or like a closing the door kind of image. So that I wanted the kids to be able to have this thing where the things that are important to us religiously are normalized. They're not preached at us and they're not made weird and didactic. And it took me 6 years to get that board book series out. So by the time that was done, that child was too old, unfortunately, for shapes, colors, and numbers. But anyway, that's okay.
And I'm sure many other children benefited from it, though.
So inshallah. Inshallah.
Okay, so you mentioned that, the books are not the books that you wanted to produce through Compass Books were not about being preachy or too overtly religious, I guess. Mm. So how would you describe to, let's say, a Muslim parent, you know, the relationship between the books that Compass Books produces and, for example, the Quran and Sunnah, or, you know, the foundational texts? So, and the place of religion in publishing, in your publishing company?
That's such a good and important question. We are not theological scholars, any of us. We're just people who try our best to follow moderate mainstream Sunni scholarship. I'm an academic on my other hat, but I'm a social scientist. I'm not a theological scholar, so it's in a way it's sort of derivative. So we try to make sure when we do our editing that we don't have what would be considered errors religiously, by making sure that we check with works of tafsir that are considered accepted and authoritative. We're not trying to do anything with Compass Books. We're not trying to do anything pushing the envelope. So, for example, I think it might have been the second children's book when we did The Little Tree Goes for Hajj, and it includes a map. We decided that it was really hard to explain to a six-year-old all the intricate details of Hajj, and that we would just make it a visual map story. And if the adult was explaining each station on the map, they could go into more details if they wanted, but it wasn't necessary, based on an understanding that I believe in Islam, that you don't necessarily need to know all the details of an obligatory act until you're actually doing it. So the kids who are six aren't going on Hajj, right? So they don't need to know all the details, just a general outline. So we made sure we triple checked all of the stations of Hajj, the spelling, you know, that we had it done properly. We don't want there to be errors in our books.
Right. Okay. So for the books that are produced for, you know, Muslim children that are going to be read by their parents, I guess that's a really important consideration. How about for the books that are produced for the secular public schools, or is it the same kind of process that you do for both? So is there any difference in how you approach the book production depending on the target audience?
There's definitely a difference, but not from that point of view. In the secular school system, you're allowed to teach about religion, but you're not allowed to teach religion. So we've tried very hard to produce books that would be acceptable from that point of view. It's not presented, let's say, as God says do this. It's presented as Muslims believe that they should be doing this. Not in those words. We don't put that in the type, but in the mentality that we use to produce the book. So sometimes when we get a submission from an author, it will be very religious, with an idea that it will be read by Muslims for Muslims, from a preaching, teaching, religious point of view. And we feel that this is a book that has potential teaching value for the secular system. So we ask the author if you mind if we change the text. And we've worked with a couple of authors who are completely fine with that. So, for example, The Little Tree Goes for Hajj, the original version said, he'd always wanted to go for Hajj, so he made dua to Allah to help him go, something like that. And we changed that to the little tree always wanted to go for Hajj, so he prays that hopefully he can go one day, something. I actually forget how we did that, but I think we changed the word Allah to God in that one. And we kept, you're allowed to have what are considered to be like quote-unquote authentic language. Like, so authentic language for the characters in the book. So the characters were quote-unquote Arab. So Arabs say Alhamdulillah, they say Inshallah. We put a few of those in, and then we had a glossary to explain what those words might mean. But in a more kind of, this is just like the language of the people of the book, in the characters, right, rather than teaching a child, when you do this, you say Inshallah. So that's what we tried to do with the books for the secular school system. And I have to say, I don't actually know if we've been terribly successful with that, because for a lot of public school teachers, they're very, very nervous about introducing from a faith group that they know little about. And the cover of that book has a picture of the Kaaba on it, And we've heard from, I think, at least one teacher. She was very, very reluctant to include that book in the classroom because for her that was still extremely religious. And also they're just not sure. They're afraid of making errors, so they don't actually know how to teach it. So that's that side of things. Then on the Muslim side, we have moved towards producing more books that are targeted only towards the Muslim market without caring if the secular market would pick it up or not. So, for example, we did a book called What Do You Say, which is a book of dua for little kids. It has, I think it has five, you know, bismillah, alhamdulillah, inshallah, astaghfirullah. And it's basically, what do you say? When this occasion happens, what do you say? So it's absolutely, definitely a book of religious teaching and guidance.
That's really interesting how you have to navigate both, not just the audiences, but also thinking about the teachers. And when you mentioned the rules about, you know, you're not allowed to be teaching religion, but you can teach about religion in the books. So I'm wondering where these guidelines can be found. So is this something that's like just implicit, or is there actually guidelines that are explicit somewhere that you have to take into consideration?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't remember how I know that. It's probably something that we looked up in those early days. In grade two, they have something called Faiths and Celebrations as a unit of the curriculum. So perhaps it's something that I picked up when we were doing research about that, like basically how do teachers teach that unit in grade two. And the Ontario Ministry has the curriculum guidelines on the website. Actually, I think we actually got the hard print copies before the internet became so much more prevalent than it was then. They're all online now. Maybe it's something that I picked up from that.
I want to ask you, Dr. Bullock, about the topic of Muslim identity more broadly in the community and how it's becoming really important for different Islamic institutions. It's something that many Muslim leaders are talking about right now, and especially with the rise in Islamophobia in Canada. And there's a whole discourse now around cultivating resilience. And I wanted to ask you how Compass Books is perhaps contributing to this conversation, or if in the future, if it plans to, and kind of its place in that discourse.
We hope that we're helping contribute to resilience, identity resilience. That was sort of one of that earlier sense that I had anyway, that I'm lying there reading books with my kid about colours and shapes, and I wanted him to have books that reflected his world, which included the mosque and other, you know, people dressed differently or gathering, sitting differently around the table. So if the books can contribute to the Muslim child feeling that their world is normal, that's part of literature, it's part of books, especially imagine if they can have books like that in their classroom, that it makes them feel that it's okay to be Muslim.
Right.
And I know that's like a bare minimum. I mean, we want people to, it's more, it should be like being proud of being Muslim. And in fact, Muslims should be able to make a positive contribution to the society. We have answers towards racism, towards economic disparities, towards poverty relief. It actually should be more about just identity, because identity can be, in fact, discussed and produced narrowly. It can also lead to some like ghettoization and insularization. I don't think that's a word, but
right.
Insularity. But Islam, in fact, it's a religion of ethics and morals. We should be able to make contributions that are beyond just identity. But if people are feeling embarrassed or ashamed of being Muslim, then obviously that higher level of ethical contribution isn't going to happen either. So it's about building those different blocks from the base up.
Right. So it's almost like a first step.
Yeah, but we would hope that you could do those steps together. Like for example, one of my favorite books we have is called Littering Stinks. And it's an early chapter book, so it's targeted towards older, maybe 8-9-year-olds. And it's a story of a Muslim girl who moves to a new town that's very, very dirty. And she goes to a secular school, and she basically rallies the whole town to help it clean up. And there's nothing really mentioned about the religion in there. She's just a Muslim girl, so that's who she is. Her neighbors are nice to her. The principal of the school is nice to her. She has friends at school, and they all rally together to do this cleanup. But we know that Islam teaches you should take care of the environment and be clean and tidy. So it's informed by that ethical contribution, but it's not about that. It doesn't say that anywhere. It's, you know, that classic story of writing, show, don't tell.
Right.
So she's Muslim. You can tell by her name, by her looks, her hijab in the images, and she's making this ethical contribution, but it's supposed to be, we hope it is, a funnily written story about how she goes about that, that anybody who's an activist could can recognize.
I see. Yeah. So part of, I guess, discussion of Muslim identity, especially for Compass Books, is also that recognition, right? So that the human recognition. So it's not just about, you know, not even mostly about what Islam is, but it's also about ethics that anyone can recognize, any good person can recognize.
Absolutely.
I guess my next question then has to do with what kinds of challenges Compass Books faces in its, you know, mission to ground Muslims as Muslims and produce books that are useful to the secular public system. So what kinds of challenges and what kinds of supports would Compass Books benefit from?
The challenges of marketing that everyone faces, and each market has its different challenges. So I mentioned already in the secular market, the challenges of appearing too religious or of it bringing material that seems foreign. That's one. The second right. one in that area is also just the challenge of being small mm-hmm. without having that sense of institutional name recognition. If I came to a teacher and said, hi, I'm Penguin Books and we want to sell, I'm from Scholastics and we've got this book about Islam. I mean, I seriously doubt there'd be any hesitation about getting that book. But, like, who's Compass Books? Like, you know, it's like, who are you? You're small and tiny and we don't know anything about you. So that's a challenge. In the Muslim market, there are different kinds of challenges. I don't know if this is changing. I suspect amongst the younger generation that it is changing, but there was always a joke when I was had just converted. Basically, Muslims don't read. It's not like a reading culture. I would hear stories amongst friends who would kind of joke about how in Canada you go on the subway and everybody's reading, but the Muslims are not reading. So I think that sort of lack of reading culture, I'm sure it's changed over the last 20 years, but that's something that we used to talk about. The second challenge is that, and I don't know if this has changed, but, you know, there's a sense that when Muslims do something for Muslims, it's quote unquote fi sabil Allah, for the sake of Allah, which basically means it should be free. So we're doing this fi sabil Allah, so can you give me a copy? But they don't seem to realize how expensive it is to produce books. I mean, even I didn't understand. I didn't understand that the $18 book
right.
has so many costs behind it that the publishers can often make only a dollar profit themselves. So you can't do it for free unless you're a charity supported mm-hmm. by donations. But if you want to do it as a for-profit, which we made the decision that we wanted it to be a business, not a charity, therefore you have to be able to pay your expenses from your profits. We pay the author, we pay the illustrator, the layout, the printer. We don't pay ourselves, unfortunately, that we have three business partners. We do all of this work, you know, fi sabil Allah, which means for free.
Right.
but we still need money to pay, right? So mm-hmm. that's a big challenge. And then the third challenge that we faced is in trying to produce books that the public school would find acceptable, we may have produced books that aren't religious enough for the Muslims who are looking for that kind of didactic religious preaching guidance. So if you have a book where the tree says, I hope to go for Hajj, instead of inshallah, I want to go for Hajj, there will be a lot of Muslim parents who, for that's not acceptable. We don't say hope, I hope. We say inshallah.
Right.
So that's a third challenge.
So What does the future look like for Compass Books? You know, thinking about these challenges, thinking about where the Canadian Muslim community is right now, and thinking about, you know, the secular public school system. What do you envision for the future? Where are you guys moving towards now?
Well, I mean, we hope very much to be able to increase our sales. We're trying to focus on the new kind of marketing, which is through social media, through influencers, through promotions. We have a free book giveaway promotion on Instagram every month. So we're just always hoping to be able to increase people knowing about us and our books. I think we're maintaining our aim to produce books both for the secular market and for the Muslim market. One of the books that we have in the works that we're really excited about is going to be a first for us. Will be a dual English-Spanish book. There's apparently a lot of Spanish converts to Islam, especially in the US, who have the same complaints. So if we Muslims say our kids are in public school and they don't see themselves reflected in the literature in the classroom, well, I've read the Spanish Muslim converts feel the same about how they are themselves not represented in Muslim literature produced in. So we're really excited about this new step for us. We're really looking forward to that book. It's being translated as we speak.
I see. Mm-hmm. That is really exciting. Thank you, Dr. Bullock, for sharing your thoughts and insights with us today. And I wish you all the best in the important work that you're doing through Compass Books and through the many community initiatives that you're a part of. So I think this might be a good place to wrap up.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sarah, for your time and for your interest in allowing me to talk about Compass Books. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This has been wonderful. Thank you. So this is the Reading Muslims podcast, and thank you for tuning in. So this is the Reading Muslims podcast, and thank you for tuning in.